You're listening to the West End Frame Show. Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the West End Frame Show, putting theatre in the frame and keeping you up to date with all things West End theatre. Usually every week we round up all the biggest theatrical news stories, discuss lots of shows and catch up with the latest Broadway gossip. However, today is our very first special episode and we're going to be talking all things Broadway. I'm your host and West End Frame editor, Andrew Tomlins, and for today's episode, I'm joined by a very special co-host. She is an acclaimed theatre journalist, having spent many years writing for the stage, including 5 years as deputy editor. She is also the founding editor of one of the top theatre websites in the UK, Musical Theatre Review. On top of that, she somehow finds time to be the editor for Stage Faves and My Theatre Mates. She's also one of my best friends and she is so super busy at the moment that I'm very lucky to have her with me today. Welcome to the West End Frame Show, Lisa Martland.
Thank you so much. It's a great honour to be here.
Today we are talking all things Broadway.
We are.
And back in March, I mean, I can't believe it's already that long ago. Back in March, we went to New York. Now, I go every year and we were chatting. I think we were at Dreamgirls or something together,
yes,
weren't we?
I think you're right.
I was talking about my trip and then you said...
I said that I was going to have a special trip. I hadn't been for such a long time to New York and I was planning...
When was the last time you were there?
I think it had been about 20 years.
Wow.
And I went about 20 years ago twice in quite close succession. And then I hadn't had a chance for various reasons. And I was planning to go again. I was just desperate to get back. And we started talking and I realised it might be quite nice to go at the same time as you. That would be great. Because I was quite happy to go on my own, but to have your company would have made it extra special.
So then you booked the same hotel.
Not that I was stalking or anything.
And you came along, you flew out like an hour and a half after me. And it was the funniest thing ever. So I'm quite cautious, or I like to be comfortable. So I flew out, I think I landed kind of early afternoon. I had plenty of time to go through security, got to my hotel room, didn't like it, went to reception, got it changed. That's a whole different story. Got my hotel, I went for a little nap, had a shower, was all refreshed. I went for a little walk, had some pizza. I found we were going to see Be More Chill that evening, weren't we? I went to the theatre, I collected our tickets, I went back, had another nap. Whereas you maybe you didn't fly an hour and a half later.
I think it was a little bit later, wasn't it? A few hours.
So Lisa, she is the most hardcore theatre...
I was obsessed.
...person I've ever met in my life. She went straight from the airport. What happened?
It just took about an hour to get through kind of customs and everything, because I hadn't been for quite a while. And I just kept looking at the clock. And when I was in the taxi, I knew that I had no time to get to the hotel or anything. I had to go directly to the theatre, so I think I was liaising with you because I had my suitcase and everything.
The show was at 8.
Yeah, I think I arrived.
I got there kind of 7:15. No Lisa. 7:30. No Lisa. 7:35. No Lisa. It's 20 minutes to curtain. I'm stood on this street in New York and I hear,
we just swept in, didn't we? But it was quite funny because we had to go through a security check.
Oh my gosh.
And I had my suitcase. So most people are just opening their little handbags and things, aren't they? But I had to open my whole suitcase on the pavement outside the theatre.
On the streets of New York.
On the streets of New York. I had arrived.
Lisa has her suitcase open for the world to see.
Yes, I'm sure it was lovely for them to see all my bits and pieces. And I just couldn't believe it because we got it tucked away, got a drink.
They were great.
They were brilliant, actually. And at 8 o'clock, about a couple of hours after I'd arrived at JFK, we were sat watching Be More Chill, and I could not have been more happier. It's just like a film set, New York, isn't it? And I think however often you go, it's pretty exciting. But I think because I hadn't been for such a long time, I was just looking up and I just couldn't believe I was there. It felt like a bit of a fairy tale.
We had a great time. You were there for what, five
nights, I think, seven shows.
And I was there for a bit longer. I was
so jealous.
10 or 11
it
days.
It was so hard to leave when knowing you were there for a few more days.
But it was nice. We saw some different things, and then we saw quite a few things together.
I think I saw seven shows, and I think at least four of them we saw together, so it worked out quite well.
Yeah, it was great. So today we're going to discuss everything that we've seen. True. Although it's quite sad because it is so brutal and just so much has announced its closure recently. Yeah. But don't worry, if you've missed something, we saw it and we'll tell you all about it, so there's no need to be sad. Yeah. So coming up in today's episode, we're going to be discussing a whopping 15 Broadway shows, including this season's current hits such as Tootsie and Beetlejuice. Plus, we have some very exciting West End bound shows to talk about, including Dear Evan Hansen, that's your fave.
It is my fave.
And Pretty Woman. Right, so we needed some structure to this because there is so much to talk about. So we're going to start out by just simply talking about our favourite show. I just want to say, we're actually sat in this lovely room, aren't we, Lisa?
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
We've got our West End Frame show mugs.
I just feel so privileged to have one.
One would think we're drinking tea. You've got a Coke and I've got a water. It's not very...
We're very sophisticated.
It's not very glamorous. So... take it away. Out of everything that opened this season, so all the brand new shows, which one was your favourite?
Well, I caught up with a few old shows as well because I hadn't been there for a while, but from this season, but the one I would pick probably is the production of Oklahoma that's on at Circle in the Square that we saw together.
I love Circle in the Square.
It was, I think, my first visit to Circle in the Square, so I love the whole environment.
It's almost like the Many Chocolate Factory, but bigger. They can lay things out literally completely in the round.
Yeah.
Sometimes the audience are on three sides. It's a really creative space, and they had completely transformed it.
Yes, Oklahoma. Well, you would have been able to compare it to previous productions and how you'd seen, because you'd seen Once on the Island
was the last thing I saw
there. Yeah, so you explained a little bit to me about how they changed the space around for that. As you say, this was all on, like, people seated all around the space. Mm. And then in the interval, they were serving food as if you were at the Box Social, and it was almost like a little bit immersive that way, where the actors went and in the performance and the way it was staged. So that was all lovely, but it was very different because, I mean, I think when we went in, the lights were up naturally, weren't they? But when they started, the lights didn't actually go down. They played a lot with the show structure. They didn't change. We were really interested, I think, that they didn't change, as far as we know, any text or any of the lyrics or anything like that. I suppose the main difference was the orchestrations, which Daniel Kluger did, which are really completely different to any way you'd never have heard Oklahoma played this way, because you're used to hearing it on such a bigger scale, such a grand orchestra in a big scale production, and this is much more intimate. This and the orchestrations I think there were eight people in the orchestra.
They were on stage.
On stage and sort of interacting as well. And I am a big fan of Oklahoma. It was the first West End show I was ever taken to at the Palace Theatre in London in 1980 when I was 10, so you can work out how old I am. And I'm revealing that to the world. So it's always really had a very special place in my heart. I've always loved all those classic Rodgers and Hammerstein movies and musicals. So I was a little bit kind of daunted about, because I'd heard it was really came at it from a different angle. And I think real traditionalists will struggle with it because it looks at it in a whole different way. But I kind of love that about it, because I think there's a lot of snobbery in the theatre industry.
Agreed.
About musical theatre and about how it can be redefined and reinterpreted. I wrote recently in a review about Fiddler on the Roof, the West End production, that when a revival of a show, a musical, is announced, some people are like, well, why revive that again? But they never say that when a straight play classic like a Tennessee Williams or anything like that is revived. So I think there's a real snobbery about it. And yet musicals are such a wonderful art form that they can be redefined for a different audience. And just like Fiddler's been redefined, I think this goes at it from a completely different angle. And you start looking at the show from, you know, in a different way that you never expected to.
Exactly.
And it's quite unsettling, but it's fabulous at the same time.
It did win the Tony Award for Best
Revival.
Musical Revival.
It did, yeah. I think well deserved, actually.
I loved Oklahoma. I was... it's really grown on me.
Since.
After we saw it, I was a bit kind of taken aback, and I think I was a bit frazzled, probably because I'd seen so many shows.
Exactly.
But I really loved the way it manipulated the audience. It played with your emotions. Yeah. As you said, it started with the house lights up. Later on, there were some scenes where it was pitch black and they were talking into handheld microphones, so you could just hear these words that they were saying so clearly. It was so haunting. And it was interactive. It was bold. It was dark.
It was. And the end in particular, no spoilers, obviously. That, again, has really stayed with me because I've seen Oklahoma many times, watched the movie many times, and I've just accepted what happened at the end, you know, as just the norm, and that's how it should have been. And, oh, great, we've got a happy ending, you know, Oklahoma, exclamation mark. But
the exclamation mark's very important,
those exclamation marks. But I just completely, the ending and the way they sort of looked at that, it really made me rethink it. I'm not sure I ever see the show itself in the same way again.
So I think it's safe to say, if you are going to New York, Oklahoma is a show that should be on the list.
I think so, and I think even if you're a bit scared of it, you know, because you're more traditionally love the show, I would still love the show, and I still it's really stayed with me.
If you are one of these people who can't deal with reinventions, then just avoid it.
If you can't cope, because it's so different, and we didn't even touch on the Dream Ballet and how amazing that and stunning that is.
I was so shocked. I mean, in the interval we discussed, didn't we? We said, how they going to do it?
It's such a small cast. We talked about the size of the orchestra. The cast is so small as well. And you're thinking, how are they going to do the Dream Ballet? It's normally such a big deal with, you know, oodles of kind of choreography and different performers in it. And that is stunningly different as well. So if you couldn't cope with the thought of the Dream Ballet being like the...
No, then a traditionist would be in hell.
I think you might have to avoid it. And I have read reviews where people have just hated it. But then isn't that brilliant? Because that's what art's about, you know.
It's evoking conversation and it's challenging the boundaries.
It is. And that's, you know, you want that to happen.
And really interesting, on Broadway this season, there were only two musical revivals. It was just Oklahoma and Kiss Me, Kate.
Which I sadly, which...
We'll touch on that later.
Absolutely.
Well, my favourite show is going to be no surprise to anybody because I've already talked about it. I think I've managed to squeeze it into probably about half the episode so far. I would go as far to say it's actually my favourite show of 2019. And that is The Prom.
Yay.
So The Prom, interestingly enough, out of all these new musicals on Broadway this season, it was the only show that was entirely... completely brand new, not based on a book or not based on a film. A complete original story. And it's a show they've been working on for a very long time. If you can hear flicking, it's because we've got all our playbills in front of us, which we're avidly finding names and finding all the right information. So The Prom is about four Broadway actors who have been labelled narcissistic by the press, and all of the shows they are starring in on Broadway are flopping, and it isn't even because of the quality of the show, it's because of their reputations. So they kind of realise that they need to do something, pull some sort of publicity stunt to redeem themselves, to make the world love them, and then their careers will soar. Well, that's what they think anyway. Yeah. So the show starts with these four actors, then they read the newspaper and they find this story about this girl, Emma, who she's gay and she lives in Indiana, she's at school, and she wants to take a female date with her to her school prom. But the PTA have ruled this unacceptable and have banned same-sex couples from the prom. The Broadway actors see this article and they say, bingo, this is what we can do. We can go to Indiana. We can change things here. We can help out this girl and save our careers.
Yes, basically. It's completely narcissistic. It's completely all about them.
So off they go. And then we go to Indiana. We see Emma, who is played by the brilliant Caitlin Kinnunen, who was nominated for the Tony Award for Best Actress in a Musical. And this whole thing erupts. I won't give any more away because at some point, I'm sure... I don't know if it can come to the West... I don't know if it would come to the West End, but I can imagine it at the Other Palace or... the Menier,
yeah, or you're right.
I can imagine a brilliant production happening and it being sold out because the theatre community goes mad. But I don't know if over here it could work on a bigger scale.
No,
however, it is being adapted into a film adaptation,
a movie,
starring the likes of James Corden, who loves a musical movie.
He loves a musical.
We've got Meryl Streep, also, who loves a musical movie, but is brilliant in everything she does. There's an all-star cast who are doing the film adaptation of The Prom, which is going to be on Netflix.
Oh, I can't wait for
that. So actually, you never know, it could maybe take off.
Yeah.
And yeah, I absolutely loved it for so many reasons. First of all, I thought the score was just genius. It was almost like... you had these two worlds being brought together. You had the traditional, old school Broadway, big, belty numbers. And then you had, on the other half, these young, full of life, kind of poppy influence songs. And then it was all brought together with certain numbers. And it was so clever. The influences were absolutely amazing. It's a Casey Nicolau production. So you have
really tell
amazing direction, amazing full-out choreo with tap numbers. I mean, we were just laughing our socks off.
Well, we just loved it. And we saw it on a Saturday night, didn't we?
It was
our Saturday night musical.
Saturday
night on Broadway. We were so hyped up with our... you know, with our branded kind of plastic cups.
Oh, so now's a good time to say Lisa is a merchaholic.
Well, I just wouldn't put it that way.
Every show has kind of like branded plastic cups.
I don't know why that hasn't come to the West End. Musical theatre enthusiasts, they love their branding, don't
exactly.
they? They love their merch. They love their merch. And so you buy your drink in a plastic cup that is refillable, and you just pay a little bit extra, and then you've got kind of a souvenir from the show. I just collected them over the week, really, which is
I'm trying to make Lisa take a picture.
Take a picture of all my merch.
All being well, if you go onto westendframe.co.uk, you can find a picture of all...
just a few t-shirts.
of everything that she bought.
Yeah. I went a bit mad at Dear Evan Hansen. I think I bought about three things.
Well, Mean Girls, you didn't know you liked the show yet and you were buying about a million things.
I got a bit overexcited. It's a different story.
So we were spoiled at the Prom by this cast.
Mm.
Like I say, they'd all been developing the show for a long time and had been involved for a long time. And you could tell it meant a lot to them.
Yeah, they had an affection for it, deep affection. I think it's like that mix of the old and the new, as you said. You felt like you were seeing a kind of old-fashioned proper musical comedy on a Saturday night out on Broadway. And I've been revisiting the score recently, and the lyric, it's just so funny. It really is funny. But then it's so clever because they've got this touching story about, you know, this young person who is being...
it has a lot of heart.
It's got so much heart in it. And she's, you know, it's that thing that's it's still around for us, unfortunately, where someone's not being accepted for their sexuality.
And you don't always see that represented.
You don't. And it's just...
on a Broadway stage.
And it's just a combination of this older generation of, like, Broadway performers who are just brilliant and these young up-and-coming performers, and they just seem so fond of each other.
If you are yet to have been best leveled, if you
wait for it.
Beth Level is this Broadway... I mean, she's done so many different roles. She's understudied, she's worked her way up, and this is just her moment. She has won a Tony before, actually. This is just her moment, and she is a diva.
She's stunning,
just
actually.
Incredible. And to watch her, the ladies improving, and It's Not About Me, her two numbers, are just absolute masterclasses. You can't imagine anyone else doing it like that.
No.
It's just... phenomenal to watch. Sadly, The Prom has now ended its run on Broadway. However, this is not the end. Stay tuned for that Netflix film with the all-star cast.
Listen to the score.
It's listen to the album. It's touring the US.
We're all lesbians.
Lisa bought her t-shirt that said "We're all lesbians." So you can get. I'm sure if you go on eBay,
you'll
find. I love
that line in one of the songs, and it says, "We're going to save the world one lesbian at a time."
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
It's so brilliant. The humour is just spot on. It's so funny, but has so much heart, and it did really move me. So once this podcast is finished, go on to Spotify,
listen,
get that cast album, and enjoy.
Enjoy.
So in this next section, we are going to do our best to fire through everything else that we saw from this season. So there is so much to talk about. We're going to really struggle.
Yeah.
First show we both saw is Tootsie.
Yeah.
We actually went to...
It was a preview.
It was like an early preview, the third or fourth preview.
It was early days.
And I enjoyed the show. Santino Fontana won the Tony Award for Best Actor, and rightly so. He was just so great in the role. We should say, Tootsie, the film, which it's based on, is incredibly different. The concept is it's this actor who can't get work, so he decides to dress up as a woman, and he lands a role on a soap opera. So it's all about the TV world. Whereas they have completely reimagined it for the Broadway stage, very cleverly so, actually. And it is about this actor who isn't able to work, and he's a Broadway actor, and he ends up landing a role in a big, flashy Broadway musical. Yeah. The score is by David Yazbek.
With a book by Robert Horn.
It's hard to comment because we saw it so early on, so we shouldn't go too much into it. I loved the first 15 to 20 minutes. I thought they were really slick, and there's a lot of great musical numbers in there.
I thought you made a really interesting point on the night about the...
What was that?
Because you're so all-knowing. Because you said that the actual transformation scene where... maybe this could be down to staging, but where he transforms for the first time into this new character, that could perhaps, there could have been a number around that, or that could have been developed a bit
One
more.
One minute he was himself as the actor,
that was really
the next minute he was Dorothy.
He was, and he just appeared as Dorothy.
And it got an easy laugh, I felt.
It did, and maybe, as I say, it might be to do with the way he's got to change and all that kind of thing, but we just didn't see the creation of that character sort of develop. I love the relationship between Santino Fontana and Sarah Starr's character. I thought that was really great fun, and there was so much humour in that. But as I was waiting, like you, in the second half for the 11 o'clock number, and it sort of seemed to start at one point and then it never came. So the score I found didn't make a massive impression on me.
I thought it was very funny. I felt it lost its heart. From the moment that we didn't see a transformation, and it was just... that change was kind of done for a laugh. I kind of sat back a bit.
I love the story. I love the original film, but it didn't... It would be interesting seeing it again, as you say, but it didn't make... it would probably be a 3 stars for me or something. It didn't make a massive impression.
Yeah. Next show that I saw was The Cher Show. This is what I went to on my own. And... it's following the latest trends. So last season we had Donna, the Donna Summer musical. We had 3 actresses playing Donna at different points in her life. This year we have The Cher Show, which is sadly already closed, with 3 Chers all at different stages of her life. And I mean, would a conversation with 3 Chers talking to each other work? Yes.
I know, because I remember you saying you weren't sure about whether that could come off, but you said it really works well.
Donna, I didn't think it worked, but Cher is just such an icon and she's got such a big personality that it was genius to watch her having conversations with herself. I loved it. Obviously, so much fantastic music. I found it really fascinating. I must admit, I didn't know all of her backstory. Stephanie J. Block won the Tony Award for Best Actress in a Musical. She was incredible. Not only did she look amazing and own those beautiful costumes, but her voice and her mannerism, she was so right and so clever in her portrayal. But she wasn't doing an impression. It wasn't an impersonation. She was an actress playing the role, and by doing that she was able to actually really move the audience. Right, be more chill. People are loving it, clearly, which is fantastic. And you interestingly said to me that it's really grown on you since
it has, because I thought after I had my trip and I saw 7 shows, I think, and I thought that was one of the ones that had made the least impression on me in a way, even though I enjoyed it watching it. I think I turned around to you and said, I think this is not aimed at me in a way. And I think the part of the problem for me was a book. Like, it's a sort of kind of sci-fi musical adventure, and it is making a very important point about believing in who you are and not trying to be somebody else just to be popular, even though, of course, anybody at high school who's been a teenager over here knows that that's such a different, difficult struggle. So it tries to present that story, which is a very unworthy story, but through this kind of sci-fi scenario. And that just left me cold after a while, and I got a bit bored with that concept, even though I thought the performances in it were excellent. Since then, I've been listening to the score a little bit more, and I'm particularly enjoying the performances of Will Rowland and George Salazar, particularly George Salazar.
Michael in the Bathroom.
Michael in the Bathroom one of my is a new classic. Favorite. And also, just a very quick point, what I would say is anything that brings... I mean, it's hard on Broadway because it's so expensive, and, you know, that is prohibitive for young people, but anything that brings a new audience... And a young, vibrant audience into a Broadway theatre, it sort of gets a thumbs up from me.
And I had to say, I walked away thinking that wasn't for me, but I didn't walk away going, that was a bad show.
No.
We should say Be More Chill has now closed as well. Next show, Beetlejuice. So this was one of my favourites, and I have not seen the film of Beetlejuice. I had no idea what I was walking into. And I should say that I quite like a dark, satirical, humorous show. For example, I really enjoy Urinetown. I sat down at the amazing Winter Garden Theatre, which is the most brilliant front of house. It's insane how huge it looks, to see Beetlejuice, knowing nothing about the show, and I absolutely adored it. It started very suddenly. There was no pre-show announcement about turning your phones off and about unwrapping sweets. Literally just started, and then you've got this girl who's at her mother's funeral, and she's singing this emotional ballad, and I was a bit like, oh my gosh, this is intense, what's going on? And then Alex Brightman, who starred as Dewey in School of Rock, originally on Broadway, he's playing Beetlejuice in the show, and he then comes on, he's like, what, a ballad already? And then he's like, we need to fix that. And then he does this epic opening number, which is all about turning your phones off, unwrapping your sweets, and just general theatre etiquette. It's lots of in-jokes, really funny, really clever, and that very much then sets that tone for the rest of the show. It's very tongue-in-cheek, but it's brilliant, brilliant delivery of the humour and the style, and it is a big Broadway show with big, expensive sets and lots of special effects. It's not relying on projections and all sorts, you know, more modern techniques. It's literally old school magic that they're using for levitating and people's hands being set on fire. It's a proper big Broadway show. The whole cast were excellent and it really surprised me. And yeah, that was one of my top four shows. Boom.
I'm not the least bit jealous that I didn't see that after after that description.
I love a bit of Kiss Me, Kate. So I was very excited to see Kelly O'Hara take on that leading role. It's a different role kind of vocally to the other things that she's done, but they've adapted the score in places and kind of stuck in a few soprano notes for her here and there, which is glorious. And it is a brilliant revival. The choreography was just off the scale, too darn hot. It was the best too darn hot I've ever seen. That second act opener, the cast were just jumping and dancing, and I was absolutely shattered from applauding at the end of that number. It was really epic. It was the only old school big revival that we had this season that, you know, a traditional revival. Stephanie Styles was a big standout as Lois. That was a glorious, beautiful evening.
That just sounds stunning.
Right, I'm firing through them. I'm on a roll here. Next one, Ain't Too Proud, The Life and Times of the Temptations. This was an interesting one. This was the last show that I saw. My seats actually weren't brilliant for this show. I was in the circle, and I felt a little bit disconnected from it. And anyone who knows the story of the Temptations will know that the lineup changed so much, and there's people constantly coming in and out. And because I was just sat so far away, I kind of found it hard to keep up with what was going on, who was in, who was out, who was where. So I think the story kind of left me a little bit confused at times. But interestingly, I'd seen Motown, or I think I saw Motown just after we got back. And there's so many parallels between the two shows, Motown the Musical and Ain't Too Proud. There's some moments which are kind of almost identical in terms of the story and moments of history that they're covering. But it's very interesting. I mean, so much happened in that Motown era, which just transformed music. And the Temptations were a huge part of that, and their music is astounding. It's the same creative team as Jersey Boys, largely.
What did you think of the choreography? Because that won a Tony Award, didn't it?
The choreography was absolutely epic. It was so slick, and the whole show was very slick, and it looked fantastic from the circle, or the mezzanine, as I should call
it. Mezzanine, darling.
Because we're talking using our Broadway lingo. It looked brilliant. So yeah, oh my gosh.
Do you think it translates over here into the West End?
I'd be interested, because Motown had a very healthy run over here.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I think it might do well over here. I obviously haven't seen it, but as long as the sort of book works and they get the story over.
There's people coming and going. You're kind of like, oh no. And
then
Don't go. And then you've got someone new in. Yeah. It's a bit like Love Island. When you've got a new islander coming in. And you're like, oh no, who are you? I don't want you.
I don't care about any of them.
I'm joking. That was a joke. I'm not comparing Ain't Too Proud
Scandal
to Love Island.
Ain't Too Proud compared to Love Island.
It's a good show. Yeah. If you love that music as well, you are going to absolutely adore it. And it is brilliant choreography. It's worth seeing. It's a great show. King Kong. With our very own, the West End's Drew McConey.
Well, we so wanted to see this because of Drew McConey doing the directing and the choreography anyway. And some people, when I said beforehand that we were going to see King Kong the musical, they just laughed. Sort of, how on earth have they made a musical about that? And I know it's been a long time coming and in development, and it did have issues. I think the book writers changed quite a lot. And I think actually before Drew came on board, there were different directors, etc. And so it was... We were kind of interested in how they pulled it off.
We should say we came at it from very different perspectives.
We did.
Because you are familiar with King Kong.
I
had never seen either or any of the
But
films.
This is really interesting because Andrew and I are from different generations. and so therefore some of the movies, obviously so many shows nowadays that are adapted for movies. And yet he saw Tootsie, he saw Beetlejuice,
and King Kong
and hadn't seen the movies of...
No,
any of
they
them.
They were all completely
and which is brings a very interesting perspective from his point of view, because he's not comparing in his head. So that's, I think, it's very interesting. So, obviously I knew the story pretty well. And, of course, they present it as a love story between... I'm going to laugh now. because I shouldn't laugh, because it is actually really delicately and touchingly...
beautifully done.
...portrayed. So I shouldn't laugh, but I think when you say it to other people, they think, oh, that's funny. You know?
People are like, what are you talking about?
But
yeah,
he does. I think that's the problem with presenting the story, is that you have got to believe in the relationship between Kong and, you know, the leading lady. Mm. And I think, actually, that is not done too badly at all.
It's great.
Is it Christine Annie Pitts, if I said that properly? Is really touchingly done. Mm. And you do, I know it sounds odd to say it, but you do believe they have a real deep affection for...
The puppetry is incredible.
Well, first of all, she's amazing.
Yes. Because, she's amazing.
Because she has to interact with this, which ultimately is a puppet, and you've got to believe that she has this affection for him. And all he does ultimately is there's no dialogue. She's just doing the dialogue and he's making the noises. So when you say that out loud, that sounds odd. Mm-hmm. And yet you believe in their relationship. So the fact she manages to achieve that on the stage a lot of the time on her own with the puppet.
A long time.
Is amazing. But as you say, I mean, the puppetry is just...
They won a special Tony Award.
They did. So it was
Sonny
Tilders and the Creature Technology Centre. Mm. And they won a special award. And when the King Kong is running with the projection of the buildings behind him, or the, you know, the forest when they take him off the island and everything, I mean, it's like nothing you've ever seen on stage before. Mm. But and in addition... Drew's work, you can really tell it's his. And I think he does a fine job. I think he had an incredible difficult task, because it's a very difficult story to tell. And I'm not sure if it completely and utterly works as a show all in all. And I'm not sure the score is strong enough. But I think he does his job with, you know, very well.
I didn't love the score, but
no.
I, having never seen the film, and literally I had no idea of the story.
It's a completely different perspective.
I was so into it. And do you remember in the interval I said, they've got to take him back. And you laughed at me.
I did, well, because
I was,
you know, it's such a well-known story to have gone in not knowing how it ended.
I was like, they've got to take him back. I couldn't get my head around the fact. thought that Drew McKinney did a brilliant job.
I did.
For me, it was an example of how projection should be used and how you can integrate technology with brilliant stagecraft and movement to tell a story. I thought that was spot
his
on.
His storytelling and his movement is just...
Oh my gosh. I don't... Sadly, it has closed. Yeah. But...
A memorable theatrical experience.
Yes, absolutely. Right, last show we need to cover from this season is Pretty Woman. And that's an exciting show because it has been revealed that it's coming to the West End in 2020.
Yes.
And if I were a betting man, I might put a little bit of money down on Andy Carl and Samantha Barks coming
I hope so.
If they bring off Faye, who is married to Andy Carl in real life and plays Samantha Barks' best friend in the show, if she comes with it, I'll be even happier because she's incredible. It's a great show. It's a Jerry Mitchell show, and you are always in safe hands when you are going to see a Jerry Mitchell production. It was snubbed by the Tony Awards. I'd heard all sorts of different things about it. I wasn't quite sure what it was going to be like, but I really enjoyed it. I think it's a guilty pleasure. Pretty Woman is a film that I have seen.
Yay, we found one.
And I think you have to, when you're adapting a film to the stage, give it individuality and make it stand strong as a piece of theatre in its own right. And I think that is exactly what Jerry has done. I think Jerry's work is always very appealing to British audiences. His humour is always so clever, and I think it will do quite well in the West End. I think people enjoy it. However, what happens in the interval is the four people sat in front of me spent the whole time comparing Andy Carl and Samantha Barks to Julia Roberts and Richard Gere. And I just found that a bit frustrating because you can compare them till the at the end of time, till the cows come home, till the sun rises over New York. And it's just not going to be the film. That's not what they're doing. I thought Samantha Barks was absolutely brilliant. I thought this was a perfect role for her. She's a bit quirky and she's got something about her. Mm. And this role was just, she could dig her claws into it and she had fun with it. And her voice has never sounded better. Wow. She was belting out those tunes. I think her voice has really matured over the years and really grown. It's really, really strong here. She is absolutely epic singing those songs. Andy Carl is a brilliant leading man. Many people would have seen him over here in Groundhog Day.
What did you think of the score? Remind me. It's
Brian
score.
Adams. I really like the score. It's got a nice kind of pop rock edge to it. It's punchy. So they are yet to confirm details of the West End transfer, but
hear
this
it
space.
First.
Very quickly, any Broadway buffs have noticed we haven't discussed Hadestown.
Oh, of course.
I didn't actually go and see it because I saw the run at the National Theatre. I think it was earlier this year. I think it was February time I went to see it.
Came back.
And that is a brilliant show. It's a brilliant score. It's brilliantly done. And I'm actually almost now maybe regretting not seeing
I'm
it a
regretting
little bit
not
because
it when we're there.
It's won the Tony for Best Musical. And I've had quite a lot of people who did see it in London and then saw it again on Broadway saying that it's so much better, it's even better now. So I think if you are going to New York, I think it's safe to say go and see Hadestown.
Yeah, highly recommended.
We did it. We managed to cover everything that we saw from this season. However, as we said at the beginning, we did see some other shows. Lee said about 15 seasons to catch up on. And I couldn't resist going back to see one or two shows which I have loved from previous visits. First up, we're going to talk about a show which is West End bound. I'm actually going to just go and pop the kettle on and leave Lisa talking for a while. So now we're going to be here for about 3 hours because you went to see Dear Evan Hansen, and this was a very special show for you,
I fell in love with the score first and I didn't even really know what the story was about, and then of course I looked into that, and of course nowadays again you can look on YouTube and see lots of interviews and videos and stuff like that. So I probably did know. It was almost like when I first saw Hamilton. When I went to see it, I probably knew almost every lyric in my head. Although I loved the fact that the show still surprised me in a way. And it was actually more dark and more intense emotionally.
It's incredibly intense.
And it was kind of more unsettling than I expected, because I just expected to be on Evan Hansen's side all the way through it. And
should we give a little snippet of what it's about?
Well, yes. Evan Hansen, he's kind of an socially awkward teenager, finds it very hard to connect with anyone socially, and it's obviously having kind of problems with that, and he's having therapy for it and struggling at school, and
something happens
which we won't go into, and a lot of people I'm sure listening will know, and he tells a lie. I don't think that's giving away too much, and the lie goes from just a tiny little white lie,
it spirals
into a huge scenario. He becomes part of something and he just lets it carry on, let the lie carry on longer than it possibly should.
And as an audience member,
you are starting to feel really uncomfortable.
And you know
it's going to crash and burn.
Come out at some point. Mm. And that is why I didn't see it this trip. I saw the original cast that year that it opened. Just going to leave that
Just
there.
Leave that there with Mr. Ben Platt.
I remember feeling sick because I knew that something was going to happen and I didn't know when or how.
Yeah.
And as it was an extraordinary experience.
And now, of course, it's got Andrew Barth Feldman, who he's like a teenager himself.
Yeah, he's 17 or something.
Anyone who knows anything about Dear Evan Hansen will know what a massive role it is. And you have to go on such an emotional arc all the way through. And he's so young and so believable. And it's so intense. You just kind of can't believe that this young person is acting and singing in the way he does it. Yes. And it's very special. And it's also, it speaks to young people nowadays, because never before have young people had to cope with so much sort of potential bullying and sort of self-esteem issues.
The world of social media.
The world of social media. So many positives to social media, but so many negatives as well. And so many people out there sort of, you know, trolling people and telling them what's wrong about them. And it's hard to live in that world. I think it's harder for teenagers than it was before. I really, truly do. And I think it speaks to those teenagers and it basically tells them you are not alone. And they're feeling that, they're identifying with it with a passion. And that's very important, I think.
Absolutely. So if you're sold, if you weren't sold before,
selling it.
You should be now. And it begins performances at the end of October at the Noel Coward Theatre in London's West End, continuing on Broadway.
Exactly. And it'll be fascinating to see who they cast as.
I know.
And I can't wait to find out.
I'm very excited.
I'm very excited about that.
And the other show that you saw was The Band's Visit. So that was the big show from last year's season, and it won the Tony Award for Best Musical, another David Yazbek show.
It is, which is very different to Tootsie.
Completely different.
How different is it from Tootsie? It's incredible.
And what did you think of
Band's Visit? I adored it, actually. I loved the score. I loved the way the music was part of the storytelling.
There's some beautiful numbers.
The music and the instrumentalists on stage are just incredible, and it's so heartfelt. It's so delicate. It says a lot about human relationships. And I was so pleased, because it's closed very soon after I went to see it. I was so pleased I caught it, and it's a score that I will listen to again. I really felt so touched and moved.
Now, a show that looked into a very different culture, the culture of high school, was Mean Girls, the musical. This was my favourite show from my trip last year, and I had to go back to see it. And we went together, you came with me. Because when I saw it, the reason I wanted to see it again, I don't often go and see shows again. There's very few Broadway shows that I've seen multiple times. But after seeing Mean Girls for the first time, I was floored, and I was kind of in shock, and I didn't even know what I thought of it when I saw it, and then I went away and it sunk in, and I thought how funny and how brilliant it was. Then the album came out, I became obsessed with it, and I knew that I had to go back and take it in properly. So seeing it again for the second time, I loved it so much more. I actually thought it was much tighter. I thought it had really settled. The majority of the original Broadway cast was still in the show 1 year on. I think there was kind of two replacements, and they were so brilliant. They were so fresh. The voices were so healthy. Mean Girls is a classic, iconic film. I think it's been adapted for the stage perfectly. It stands strong as a piece of theatre in its own right. I love the different musical styles. It's not all about pop and rock. You've got some old school kind of tap numbers weaved in there. And it's very clever. The different characters all kind of have different musical styles that they bring to the score, and I absolutely love it. And there is a lot of hype about it coming over here, which I'm sure it will do at some point.
I wasn't quite as enthusiastic as you, but I think maybe when I think about it, I had a similar experience to you than you had the first time.
Yes.
Which was, it was so busy and there was so much happening. I'm not a massive fan of the film. So maybe I was I found it a bit difficult to connect with the characters and really sort of care about them, if I'm honest. But I think it's such a busy show. There's so much going on. I couldn't criticize the vocal performances, the acting. It was so slick.
It's another Casey Nicholaw production. I love Tina Fey. I think she's adapted this show so cleverly for the stage.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Fans who love the film won't be disappointed.
That's true.
Lines are in there, but in different places. It's not copying itself.
Yeah, that's one thing I would agree with. It's a really a refreshing adaptation.
And Gretchen has this amazing monologue when she is comparing herself to an iPhone without its case, which just
worth
destroys
it
me.
That
when I think about it, it kills me. Another of my favourite shows, another repeat trip for me, was Waitress. Oh. They announced that one of my favourite people on planet Earth, Shoshana Bean, was taking over as Jenna on Broadway, and I had to go and see her. There was no way I was going to miss Shoshana back on Broadway for the first time since she did Wicked. And yeah, she was absolutely epic. She's wrapped up her run now. She's passed the baton over to Alison Luff. Shoshana Bean just brought something so unique to the role. She was feisty, but also so vulnerable. And her vocals were absolutely off the scale. The final show
what
that
a surprise
I saw,
this is.
I saw Wicked on Broadway. It was my annual trip to see Wicked on Broadway. I always have to pop into the Gershwin Theatre and just see how they're getting on.
See how it's doing.
Check in on them. I think it was one of the best performances of Wicked I've ever seen.
Wow.
Jessica Vosk, I've actually been talking
about
that.
That is a big compliment from that man.
That man. I've been talking in the podcast quite a lot about Jessica Vosk, who is an amazing Broadway actress who was starring as Elphaba in Wicked on Broadway. She's now in rehearsals for Becoming Nancy, the new Joni Mitchell musical.
Stars and Drew.
And Drew have written the score. She was just so funny and brought out humour in all different places that I've never seen from Elphaba before. And then I saw the Wicked legend that is Katie Rose Clarke, who was back as Glinda. That was a really special night. And I think there's something really special about Wicked on Broadway. It's big, it's slick, it's fierce, the audience response is epic. It's really special. If you are going to New York, what do people need to go and see?
I imagine they really need to see Moulin Rouge. I mean, we obviously haven't seen it because it's only just opened, but I've seen a few clips on YouTube and wow, it's getting, you know, quite the hype, and I just think it may possibly live up to that hype. And it just looks, from what I can see, it's very red. There's a few sorts of, you know, corsets involved, I think. But it says it looks like it's stunning. It looks like it could be a massive hit. I mean, we can't tell, we've seen it, but I would imagine if you're on the way to New York in the next, you know, next few months, it must be on your must-see list.
So to summarise, if people are going to New York now, they must see Oklahoma. Yeah. Tootsie's on a lot of people's lists. There's a lot of love for Tootsie.
There is a lot
of people are loving it. Beetlejuice is doing really well. Definitely go and check out Beetlejuice. Of course, Dervin Hansen. However, you can wait and see it in the West End if you want to. Or you want to be cool and see it first. It's still running. Mean Girls is going strong. Waitress, of course, actually closes on Broadway in January, which is sad. So last chance to catch Waitress on Broadway. And of course, Wicked still going strong. And Moulin Rouge, everyone is loving.
Yeah.
And then stay tuned for that movie of the prom and we'll see what happens
with
that.
No, looking forward to that.
Lisa, thank you so much for joining me today.
Such a fun time, thank you.
Are you okay? Are you
remembering
everything?
Well, it's so hard to sum up all these. I mean, it's so exciting, isn't it? There's so much wonderful stuff out there. So it's so hard to sum up how you feel. You could all talk. You know, we could probably both talk about certain shows for ages. But it's been so wonderful to relive our trip.
We had a good time.
We had an amazing time. It was wonderful to be able to share it with you. It's
really
made it that
it was
extra
really
special. Yeah, it was really special.
So you are, like I said, a very busy woman. You've got lots going on. You're everywhere and winning awards and being on top 10 lists all the time. So where can people find you on social media? How can they stay up to date with you and all of your sites?
So obviously, I suppose my baby is Musical Theatre Review. So
I think everyone will know Musical Theatre Review, but
if you don't, then you can check us out on Twitter at Musical Theatre R, and also at the website musicaltheatrereview.com.
It's one of the best websites in
theatre
land.
So yeah, please do. Please
London.
Engage with us. Tell us if you think there's stuff that we're not covering or missing.
Enjoy everything that you're doing. You interview fab people all the time.
We have great. We're very fortunate. We cover musical theatre on the Fringe in London, all the regional tours, and Broadway as well. We have a great Broadway reviewer, and we have lots of really good feature stuff. We've got lots of Edinburgh coverage at the moment, and just had the nominations for our Best New Musical Award at Edinburgh. So
yes.
It's exciting times.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the West End Frame Show. Make sure you head over to www.westendframe.co.uk to stay up to date with our podcasting adventures and to look at a picture of all of Lisa's merch. We're going to make sure we've got a picture on there so you can see everything that she bought. You can also find West End Frame on Twitter, Instagram and on Facebook. If you enjoyed this episode, please hit that subscribe button and leave us a rating. I'll be back on Tuesday for another Stagey Catch-Up.